I'm one of those individuals, like, even you take away everything from me, you can't take away my thoughts, you can't take away my passion, you can't take away my energy, you can't take away my charisma. And there are times, I think, of something I was talking to someone, I said, you know, be uncommon if you can. Because see, to me, Ben, I think in our own uniqueness and our own struggles gives birth to our greatness. And I think that's really, really where it comes from. It's understanding that we are all unique. We all have our own struggles, and unpacking that and acknowledging it and taking ownership of it. Like, we've heard this before, but like, allows us to understand that then that is where true greatness can rise above. But we have to go down that path. And I see so many individuals where there has to be a massive life circumstance that has to happen in order for you to unpack that situation, whatever it is.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com.
Enjoy the show.
Welcome everyone to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. If you love to learn, be inspired, and succeed, we're here to speak and teach. I'm your host, Ben Albert. I believe if you're not living, you're dying. If you're not growing, you're withering. And if you're not engaged, you can turn this off right now. Because we here at LST are lifelong learners. And listen, I'm not your guru. I'm an ordinary guy on a journey to learn from the experts. My goal is to host each conversation with a beginner's mindset, learn, and let the experts speak and teach their truths. Join us! Oh yeah, and don't forget to subscribe. This episode is brought to you completely free. Get some stake in the game here. My fee for the show only takes a few moments. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Bonus points. Please leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right, let's get started. Welcome once again, everybody, to Learn, Speak, Teach on the Real Business Connections Network. I'm here today with Christian D. Evans. Christian, what's up, man? How are you?
Hey, Ben, I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm really looking forward to it. I was listening to a lot of your content before, Chris Van Vliet and all your other episodes, and I'm really just excited and appreciative for being featured on here, man.
Yeah, man. Listeners, Christian's a breath of fresh air. I was joking before we hit record. I think that you're virtually always outside when we jump on these calls. Where are you calling out of today, man?
Right now, I am from Florida, Jacksonville. I am just enjoying the beautiful weather out here. It helps me focus, helps me stay energized, and go punch life in the face, you know? So it works out for me.
Punching life in the face. Always high energy, baby. And for anyone who doesn't know Christian, he is a business owner. He is the founder of Be Uncommon LLC, where he's a business strategist. He's an investor and host of the fastest growing business podcast, Journey with Christian D. Evans. I humbly was on that show. It isn't out yet, but it'll probably come out at a similar time as this comes out. So check out the show notes, gang. Over 175 fantastic episodes and growing day by day. So a lot we can tackle here. I always like to start with the story, man, because you're crushing it. Like, your podcast is going through the roof. You're one of the most connected network people I've ever met. You're a great business strategist, a great investor. Where did you get your start, though? And feel free, if you're willing, to talk a little bit about the nosebleeds. How did you get to where you are today, man?
Yeah, one of the things I'm known for saying is point of prosperity, what I learned from jacking off. And the reason why I say that, really, Ben, is because a lot of it came down to pornography. I struggled with that for many, many years. And it was interesting because during that journey, it helped me reanalyze my patterns, my lives, my limiting beliefs, my thoughts, you know, and things like that, that then facilitated into business and spiritual and relational as well. And, you know, we could sit there for a little while, but one of the things that I notice when I struggle with pornography is just acknowledging how, hey, there are certain things, these subconscious and conscious, you know, patterns that are happening. And we're not aware of that until obviously something hits us upside the head, whether that's life, whether that's a circumstance, whether that's a situation. And so what was interesting is leveraging that kind of thought processes and applying it to business. I think that tremendously helped. And what I mean by that is I've interviewed a lot of people on my podcast, just like yourself, just high caliber people. And it's been a lot of fun. And one of the things I'm always asking is, how do you optimize failure? Like, if we know, hey, failure is the best learning experience. Okay, well, cool, wonderful, got it. But I think sometimes I've been known, and I think Ben, you, and many of us, we all just rush through failure because we love to rebound, right? We're entrepreneurs. We're energized. We get back up and we just keep moving. And that's fantastic. But also I believe in getting alpha mode and focusing on, hey, how do I optimize this learning experience, this failure? What questions should I be asking? How do I analyze it? How do I make sure that I build the right boundaries and systems and processes in place to ensure that I don't, you know, get in that same circular situation again, right? Because, hey, failure is, we want to learn, we want to move forward. But sometimes I think we've all been in a situation where it's like, hey, 2 months, 3 months, we fail at the same thing, the same situation, the same stupidity. And it's like, why do we keep doing that? And so there, you know, we have to analyze that. And I think that's the best thing that what I came from, you know, that addiction from that porn, is that's what I started kind of analyzing, if you will, during that process. So, but also it's been a journey. You know, I remember numerous times when I was building my business, and I remember, oh my gosh, where, you know, we had almost 100,000. And at that time, there was a lot of money, $100,000 just held up by merchant accounts, just overnight, boom, everything was held up. And that money I needed, like, I didn't have a savings. Like, I would needed that money to get into the account so that I could take that money to then pay off my people, to pay in the ads, to keep the ads running, to keep the phone calls going, to keep everything up and running. And everything just went. And I'm just sitting there going, holy crap. And I remember anxiety, this depression, this frustration, this annoyance, this just shame. And it was just like, oh my gosh, you know, is this the, you know, implosion? And that happened numerous times. You know, whether it be, you know, several thousand and one merchant. But then obviously you're learning from that experience and said, okay, well, we got to make sure that we're never in that situation again. So really honing in on, you know, profits first mentality, which is more of an accounting terminology where, hey, you know what, making sure that we've got some money in the savings, in the checking, so that, hey, when the unexpected happens, we can keep pushing forward and we got some money. So at that time, when that $100,000 was held up by the merchant accounts, I actually took my credit cards and maxed them out, kept the ads running. And what was interesting at that time, Ben, I want to share with you, it's something, a lesson that I learned. It was hard. Being authentic and being vulnerable. This is something I learned from being addicted to pornography. I realized that people will buy into your story if you're just authentic and vulnerable with them. And just being truthful. It was tough though. It was tough to tell my team, hey guys, you know, I'm not able to pay you for another few days. This is a circumstance. This is a situation. I take full ownership of this. And if you guys want to leave, if you guys want to do any legal action, I totally understand. There's no, you know, but I just want to let you know, I will pay you, but I'm not able to pay you right now. And what was so interesting is the camaraderie, the synergy, the energy that they fed into me. And even though I was broken and I felt broken, I remember so much where my team was just able to come alongside me and they believed in me, even though sometimes I didn't believe in myself. And so that was something that I learned. And I remember, you know, dealing with pornography, you know, it was tough, but going to my family and sharing the struggle, and being authentic and vulnerable. But again, it's something that I've realized over and over and over and over again, that at the end of the day, yes, you may do some bad business deals. Yes, life happens. Yes, you know, life punches you in the face. But the reality is, when you show up and how you respond to it is so important. We've heard that. But that's how I chose to respond in that circumstance. I could have just cowered down and said, no, I'm not going to, you know, tell anybody. I'm just going to act like everything's okay. I'm going to lie to them. I'm going to, like, whatever. And I want to let you know that I thought that. I literally was thinking, hey, you know what? I'm just going to say, hey, we're not able to pay people. Why? Oh, you know, because whatever, you know, and made some stupid excuse. But the reality was, I was just like, hey, this is it. We got the ads back up and running. We had a cool sales team at the time. They were able to make enough money to pay off payroll. I didn't pay myself, obviously. and, you know, able to pay off some credit cards and get another merchant account. And we got that back up and running. But that was one of the toughest parts. And implementing the right learning behaviors and implementing the right systems and process. But that's kind of been my story, man, in kind of a nutshell.
Talk about a tough place to be in. You're maxing out your credit cards. You're going all in, man. And I do think this is a common narrative, and I want to kind of tackle it. I've seen it in my life. I make the same mistake over and over and over and over again. I mean, you just said it. So I didn't expect to talk about pornography today, but I'm happy to. I want to talk about that, but then I want to do some broad strokes for generalized business advice. For the pornography thing, like, when did you realize, and you don't have to get super detailed, but when did you realize you had a problem, and what did you do? Like, what steps did you take to make sure that you didn't keep on falling back into that negative cycle where you're repeating the same results, which was obviously emotionally crippling you? So what did you do, and how'd you get out of that?
Yeah, I really appreciate kind of going down this path a little bit. So I won't get too detailed. However, the one of the things I want to, you know, very, very, very forthright in this regard. It wasn't like, hey, I was cold turkey, never looked at porn again. I was like, boom, yay, wonderful. Or, you know, I never like went to therapy, unpacked my story and got healing, right? It was a very tough, tough journey of unpacking lies, deceit, addiction, and so forth. And I guess one of the things that I started realizing is when I was doing behaviors at a non-common rate a day, right? And that's when I started realizing, okay, there's something going on here. In fact, it was my wife at that time where she said, hey, you know what? I think you're addicted to this. Like, she actually caught me 1 year, a few days right after Christmas, walked in on laundry room. There I was, you know, and it was just shame, guilt, just anxiety, frustration. And I wish, like I mentioned, that was the day that I went cold turkey, never looked at it again, but it didn't. It was a lot of lies and deceit. I remember numerous times where I would be good for 2 weeks, and then all of a sudden I just fall off the horse. I fall off again. And I started, that's where I really had to become very intentional with the pattern. So I started saying, okay, when am I most susceptible? Okay. Early in the mornings, right? Asking these questions. Hey, you know what? How can I build the right boundaries and, you know, boundaries in place? Like, one of the things that I started thinking about this is like, the affair doesn't happen in the bad. The affair actually happens when you're flirting with that girl or that guy at the coffee shop, you know, downtown, right? And that's where it starts, right? So it's like, how do I make sure that I build the right boundaries in place so that I'm not even in that situation? Because when you're in the bed with that other woman, other man, that's when it's tough to say no. So that's when I started realizing with like addiction, for example, was, hey, when I had the phone in me early in the morning, hey, that was very susceptible. Temptation was there. It was very easy to go down that path. That's the same thing that I apply with business. See, my spending habits, I'm one of those people that, hey, if I have a $10,000 max credit card, I'm going to max that son of a bitch out all the way out, right? Just because that's just my spending. That's just how I do things. And that's what I noticed, like with, that's one of the reasons why we got in that situation where $100,000 was held up. And at that time, you know, in all retrospect, that's not that much money, but that was a lot of money. It's like, holy shit, you know, like everything. And so that's what I started realizing, like, okay, I've got a spending habit and I got a spending situation and I need to build the right boundaries. And so that's when I started developing the profit first process and implementing that into our business and being very strategic and very disciplined. And that was tough for me, right? That was just one avenue that I really had to work hard, but that came from the analyzing and understanding and structuring things accordingly and just asking myself the right questions, like, okay, hey, what am I not good at, right? And becoming self-aware, like, hey, I'm not one of those people that I can have my phone early in the morning with me because I just know that it's going to lead toward that. So how do I totally eliminate that whole thing? Just not even have my phone. Cool. Now all of a sudden, I don't even have to have the choice, right? The choice is not even there. It's the same thing with, hey, you know what? When we implemented the profit first process into our business, hey, guess what? We had that whole thing automated. So it wasn't like the money was coming into our business account. I had to be the one that delegates that money accordingly because I didn't have the accountability. I didn't have the responsibility. I didn't have the ownership. It's cool. I didn't want to have the choice, right? Sometimes eliminating yourself from that situation where you even have to be in a choice, like, oh man, should I do that? Should I not? Right. And so again, one of the things I started realizing is, you know, the way the brain works, you know, definitely with porn addiction, if you will, is it just starts developing some sort of story, right? Mm. And so what I said is one of the things that I do very well with is I don't look at a woman more than 3 seconds. And the reason why is because then that just, you know, eliminates that temptation. And if I do, I'm sitting there and doing eye contact, and I'm very intentional with that. And it's been a lot of training and focus on that. And it's actually very interesting because numerous times when I'm having that conversation with professional women, they like respect that. Like, wow, there's something different. Why do you, you know, you're just very focused on the eye contact. It was because, you know, I put that boundary in place. So, you know, and again, that's the same thing with I look at professionally in the business world, right? Mm-hmm. I think definitely men, we get a very bad rap for a good reason, that we sexualize women and so forth. And so one of the things is whenever I'm doing a compliment with one of my female employees or whatever, and making sure that it's characteristic and attributes of that personality, of that person, more so than the physical attributes and the characteristics. Like, you look really pretty and sexy in that thing, right? That's not necessary and that's not needed. And just saying, hey, you know what? I love your work ethic. I love your tenacity. I love how you just go out there and make things happen. I love that you're able to be on the front end. I love how you close deals and that tonality, et cetera, right? And just being professional with those compliments. And again, that sounds so basic, but it's so sad how many people I've literally have seen that they mess that up. And yeah, that person may look very attractive in that XYZ dress or whatever. However, though, it doesn't mean that you should be the one that's saying that. So that just kind of, you know, helps you understand kind of where I came from in my the way I think about things now.
I love that tip, because really you're saying to compliment the accomplishment, compliment the way they someone makes eye contact, the way they show up every day, the way they're accountable, the way they're friendly, the way they're courageous, the way they're driven. You're complimenting who they are, not the body that they were given or the body they developed. Or if you think they look good, compliment their hard work in putting in hours at the gym every single week. Like, wow, you're driven. I'm getting chubby, Christian. I'm looking bad. You inspire me, kind of thing. So I love that. You had mentioned Profit First framework. What did you call that?
Yeah, the Profit First. That's not me. That's a book. It's an accounting book, and it's for business, where they say, hey, you know what? It's just kind of structuring into 5 pillars. Or 5 like bank accounts, if you will, and structure each one as, hey, this goes to taxes. This goes to the infrastructure, the ownership of it. This one goes to, you know, paying yourself dividends or maybe more of a bonus structure, et cetera. So you can determine. He goes into a lot of different, like, goes into like 10 different things that you could establish in your business, but it automates it throughout it. So then you're not in a situation where, oh man, you know, I want to take a paycheck from your business. You know, maybe you're doing $1 million EBITDA or more, right? And you want to take a paycheck. Well, you definitely should. You're the owner. And he basically spells out how that should structure, what that looks like, and how to get to that next level. But that's the CPA thing. I'm not an expert at it. You know, but that's just more of a.
So we won't dissect that, every little piece of that, but I am curious, like, what drives profit in your business? How are you focusing on profit? I know personally, like, I love podcasting. I'm starting to realize I put out too many episodes, and there's certain profit centers that actually, if I were to put a little more time in, I could raise my revenue quickly, but I'm so passionate about this that I'm having this cognitive dissonance. I'm wondering if you've ever had that happen in your life. In addition to it, like, what is driving profit? What is, you know, helping you move the needle as quickly as possible?
Now, Ben, this is actually a really good example. One of the reasons why I have my podcast as well is because what I've noticed is we don't know what to focus on, the right time, right sequence, and the right thing at the right time and the right sequence. Because to me, it's like, you know, education, right? If you focus on pre-calc before you focus on the basic of math, it won't make any sense to you. And you're just going to fail. You're going to get frustrated. And that to me is what I find so interesting about business itself. So, for example, business owners, whether you're at $2, $3, $4, $5 million, you know, kind of run rate, you may think, hey, you know what? You look at your business holistically because you've never built a business before. And you look at it and say, hey, I want more revenue. So what do I need to do? I need to get more sales. Okay, well, what do I need to get more sales? Oh, well, I need more to spend more ads, or I need to spend more acquisition, or whatever that acquisition channel is. But the reality is maybe you're at a $2, $3 million run rate. Maybe you've maxed out, and maybe the thing is, I'm not maxed out in acquisition, but hey, you know what? Now what you need to do is implement more of, hey, how do I increase the LTV? What can I add for each customer to increase that? Upsells, partnerships, collaborations, services, whatever it is, to increase that on the back end. Then now all of a sudden you got your business from $2 to $3 million. You did nothing on the front end, the top of funnel. All you do was just increase that LTV. And all of a sudden now you're at a $7-10 million business. Is that possible? Of course it is. But see, the thing is a lot of businesses, they don't know what to focus on, the right thing at the right time, the right sequence. And like I mentioned, that's the reason why I kind of have built my podcast, because yeah, I talked to a lot of 8 and 9 figure entrepreneurs like yourself, very high successful entrepreneurs, diving deep into this, talking about, hey, what we should be focusing on in the right thing and the right time and the right sequence. And so I think one of the things that I talk about is when you're below 6 figures, okay, or below 7 figures in general, you need to focus on, and I mentioned this, and I've got this information from a lot of different avenues, but one of the things is you got to focus on one acquisition channel and one product and one service and driving that to about 1 million. And you need to be focusing on sales. You don't need to be focusing on brand. You don't need to focus on impact and influence and legacy or anything like that. Get all that stuff out of your head. Cool. Wonderful. There will be a time where you can do that. You cannot focus that when you're below 7 figures. Okay. When you're at a $2-3 million, now you're in a situation where, and you got to anticipate this, because when you had a million, $1.5-2 million, you've got a pretty good margin. And the reason why is because you're wearing 1,000 hats and you haven't hired a lot of people on yet. Now, there's a lot of infrastructure that you got to establish. You got to develop SOPs. You got to develop systems and process. And there's a lot that goes into each one of those categories. But once you develop about $2-3 million, now all of a sudden you got some streamline. You got acquisition coming in and you have some employees rock and rolling. Anticipate your margins to decrease slightly, because now all of a sudden you've got a team. Mm-hmm. And though you want to make sure that you want to have a really good monthly reoccurring, what I've noticed, monthly reoccurring revenue, that is, you want to make sure that, hey, whatever your system, your service, your product, whatever it is, you want to have something established where there's a stickiness, okay, whether it's some additional thing. The reason why I say this is because I have a friend in South Carolina. He runs a carpet store, and he does about $1 million. He's never able to get beyond $1 million. And the reason why is because guess what? When they service the carpet, that's all their service is. And I told him, hey, you need to have something reoccurring, whether it may be a partnership in, hey, I can come back and I can clean your carpet for you. I can clean your, you know, whatever that surface is that I just put down, or, you know, updating or whatever it is, right? There's something that you can do. Obviously, there's commercial property as well, which is obviously a higher margin, kind of bigger contracts. However, though, I was just giving an example for, you know, he does a lot of residential. And so I said, hey, you need to have something reoccurring, because otherwise you're not able to maximize that impact. So, hey, you input that carpet, wait 6 months, come back and retarget them. They're already in your ecosystem, and say, hey, I can come in here. You probably have dogs. You probably have cats. You probably whatever. And mm-hmm. I can come and do that for you. And so my point is there's so many of us, we think transactional. We don't ever think, okay, hey, how can we maximize that on the back end? We already got that customer. Marketers, I see this all the time, because I was guilty of this 100%, right? I was very guilty of this, where, hey, I was focusing so much on top of funnel on the front end. Hey, how do I acquire? How do I keep getting? How do I scale, right? And what I found so interesting is, because we all talk about scaling and growth and, you know, this massive explosion, and that's cool and that's fantastic, but it's sexy. And one of the things that other marketers are really good at with selling other business owners is we tell them what they need to hear, or we tell them what they want to hear, but they actually give them what they need, right? And what I mean by that is, hey, you know what? Yeah, I can get you more leads. And everybody wants, hey, that's what I need. I need more leads to generate more revenue, to generate more what, right? But the reality is sometimes you don't. Just like I mentioned, you need to maybe maximize that LTV. Maybe you need to streamline your systems and process. One of the things, I had a friend of mine, and he was a digital marketer. He runs a really cool business. He's doing about $2-3 million. And I said, what kind of industry? Well, I work with real estate agencies. I work real estate investors. I work with, manufacturing. I work with SaaS. I was like, stop. That's the reason why you're not able to scale. See, I had someone on my podcast, and he runs a 9-figure digital marketing agency. And all he focuses on is web, paid advertising, mm-hmm. web design, and funnel for lawyers. That's it. He doesn't have, you know, PPC, and he doesn't have like YouTube ads. He doesn't have like all this. No, he just focuses on those three things, those three products, maybe a few on the back end that he doesn't offer, but it's boom to specifically lawyers at this specific kind of revenue. That's it. and he's got a nine-figure business, but now he's able to increase it. So it's one of those things that I found so interesting in today's industry. And again, once you dial in, and again, you can do this with any industry. I was talking to a guy, one of my friends, he owns like 3,000 units all over the United States of real estate, but he just focuses on single family. That's it. Like, that's his niche. He doesn't focus on multifamily. He doesn't focus on big commercial properties. He doesn't focus on, you know, wholesaling, buying, you know, he focuses on, boom, this is my niche.
Single family. Three.
Yeah, exactly. And he's dialed that in. Now, what's so beautiful, and you got to think about it, because on the back end of your process, your systems, your employees, your process, your onboarding, all everything becomes so synergistic. And the reason why is because it's not like, oh man, this guy's got a business. We got to figure out his audience. We got to figure out his strategies and tactics. And we got to no, because what happens is when you're that avatar, that client on the front end, the back end, you're onboarding everything else almost becomes, it's literally copy and paste in a different way. Their marketing, their campaigns, everything might be different. However, though, it becomes so streamlined because you understand your audience. So hopefully that makes sense, Ben.
Makes a ton of sense. One of my mentors, Jeff Bloomfield, he talks about, you know, the why story. The why story is not about you. It's really about your target person. So when you tell your why story, you're speaking to them. Then you can go into a problem story where you address the problem, but it's not just a generic problem. It's a problem that specifically people that install and sell carpets have. So when you're walking through your presentations, you can speak specifically to your target client using their framework, their mentality, and you understand everything about their business. And it seems like if you're someone like me currently, Christian, where I don't have that hyper niche focus, you end up in a lot of different, you've got your hands in multiple cookie jars. It's harder to be a specialist and perfect in that one incredible thing. And it sounds like you're saying being a specialist in that one incredible thing is what we need to do in many cases. And then maybe once we've scaled, we can have our hands in multiple cookie jars, I imagine.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that because see, this is where you have to just, and I was talking to someone actually, it was interesting. He was doing a mid eight figure, like $50 million or something, a business, really beautiful, successful. What's interesting about his structure though, because I asked him this, I said, hey, you know what, at what point, or what is your perception or perspective on, hey, I should add another product line or another service in addition to what I already have? And the reason why I asked that is because see, you and I know that anytime I add another product and service, it may sound sexy, but you have to understand the data. You have to acknowledge, hey, you know what? What are we going to charge? What's our margins? And as well as what's it going to cost me? Because you have to understand, I have to build out the whole system, process, team, everything like that on the back end. So it's not as easy as we may think. Definitely when you're running, and so many people get that wrong because on the front end, like you mentioned, hey, you can do all these other different products and services, but you're not going to become the greatest at it. What I learned from this is actually, I was listening to Darren Hardy, and he was talking about how he was talking to Dr. Oz. Dr. Oz has done so much. He's been on numerous TV shows, written books. He's done all sorts of things, but he also does surgeries. And Darren Hardy was asking, hey, Dr. Oz, how do you do all this plus do amazing surgeries? He says, when I go to the surgery table, I don't open up the body. I don't open up the head. I don't have everything else. I don't sterilize all the material. None of that. All I do is walk in. I do one, two, maybe three cuts, and that's it. But I'm the best at that. And that was so powerful because, see, so many of us, we want to do lead generation. We want to build out the systems and the process for the companies. We want to integrate the HubSpot, their CRMs, or their Salesforce, or whatever they got going on. We want to, you know, do this. And that's cool. But you have to understand, see, that's where, to me, I found out collaboration partnerships are the best and most powerful. What do I mean by this? Well, guess what? Hey, you know what? I've got someone that works with digital marketers that run below seven figures and help them scale to seven figures. Wonderful. I've got another friend that helps digital marketers scale from seven figures to eight figures. Awesome. Guess what? I connected those people and they're collaborating. Why? Because guess what? When people are reaching out to this person that has a business that, hey, I only work with seven figure digital marketers and help them scale, some six figure entrepreneurs get into our ecosystem and say, well, we can't work with you because you're not at this revenue base yet. So, hey, go and talk to Billy Bob. So that's one of the reasons why when I kind of want to loop back around here, when you're adding a product and service, you have to look at the data. And you have to say, hey, you know what? Is this going to be profitable or is it not? Is it going to take too much time, energy, and effort? Because if so, then hey, let's figure out how to actually white label this or actually leverage this with a partnership or collaboration. And sometimes that is actually the best thing. So hey, if you're not the best at YouTube ads, so I've got this one friend, he's actually getting into the NFT space. And he's got an amazing digital marketing. He knows his audience. He's got an amazing eight-figure business. And he's getting into the NFT space because a lot of his audience, a lot of his clients are wanting to get in there. And he was looking at this and saying, okay, you know what? We don't know anything about NFT. We don't know how to do it. We could go out there and push it out. And so what he did was he did beta tests with one of his clients and he pushed it out. He analyzed how much time, energy, effort, resources it took to do this project. What was the return on investment for themselves internally for doing that project? And was it profitable? He realized that it wasn't. So he said, okay, fantastic. So instead of rolling it out to all of his customers thinking this is the new sexy thing, he realized internally in the infrastructure of his business that wasn't. However, though, he went out there, found someone that they're excelled in NFT projects. That's it. And he said, hey, I want to collaborate, connect. I saw you got some cool case studies. Let's connect. Let's see how that works. And we can come alongside. Now, all of a sudden, hey, we increase that. Now, again, it's, hey, they're doing all the heavy lifting. They're doing all the work. I'm bringing my clients. Wonderful. I make margin on that. Beautiful. But I don't have to do anything. And they become Excel. They become perfect. They do what they do best, which is this NFT projects. My point is that sometimes we have to think holistically in collaborations and partnerships. And sometimes that's the best way. So one of the why I say that is I think that's just a missed opportunity right now. And I was talking to someone the other day or maybe a few months back because ad cost, because of the iOS update, because of the cookies, because of the privacy policy that's going on in the marketing and advertising industries, we don't have as much data on these users as we used to. And that's a good thing for like the users, but it's like really bad for us marketers where we want to go out there and like, hey, I want to know, did you just recently go to Crumble Cookie, the other day? I want to make sure I advertise in front of you, et cetera, right? Like I want to get so targeted. However, though, that's one of the reasons why partnerships and collaborations is so important. And so you got to think that process and say, hey, you know what, how can I come along and partner with someone that has my ideal client that has a different vertical? They're servicing in this category. Hey, I can come along. That's my audience. And I can come along, give them some of my service or whatever. And now I've got amazing clients and I've got a flood of clients and you work 5 or 7 people. You never have to work advertising ever again. And it's very, very, very powerful if you know how to do it correctly. But I just want to share that with you because I think so many of us, and I've seen business owners that are $2, $3 million, they want to add another product, they another certain service because they think logically, oh, that adds another, $1,000, $3,000, $4,000, $10,000 to the top of line. Wonderful. Whatever it is, right? Per client. But sometimes you have to look at it holistically and understanding you've got to make decisions based upon data and not just based upon like, oh, this sounds like a good idea. Does that make sense, Ben?
It does. You're looking at it holistically. You're a personal trainer. You don't also have to be a dietitian. You don't also have to be a nutritionist. You don't also have to be a physical therapist. You don't also have to be a chiropractor. You create a network of relationships where you can be the who's who, where still someone can come to you. The best consultants do this, I imagine, right? Someone can come to you and the consultant can maybe diagnose that there's a problem and a potential solution, but rather than going and having to fulfill and solve it themselves, they defer to one of their partners that actually has the capacity to fulfill that solution. So it makes total sense. I'm wondering, like, You clearly are building these relationships on a day-to-day basis. I mean, you're a very well-networked person. How many partners do you currently have? And if that number is not as high as you'd like it to be, like what should I strive to reach in terms of these strategic partnerships?
Really great question. So I actually, this has been a journey for the last 24, really about 18 months or so, where I've been really, really focused on this. One of the things that I discovered is I really want to make sure when I'm living my life, and this is one of the values that I have, I don't want to be transactional anymore. I want to be transformational. What do I mean by this is I want to be relationships first. And so one of the things that I do, even when I partner with someone, because I partner with some people that I referred people to, I'm one of those individuals that I'm not going to say, hey, Ben, go and buy XYZ, right? No, I'm going to say, hey, Ben, you know, like, and trust me. But hey, I've got a friend of mine that I think there'd be a cool synergistic relationship. I think there'd be cool, like maybe you could, you know, provide service to him or he could provide a service to you. But I think you guys should talk. I'd love for you guys to collaborate and talk. Guess what? Because you and I know, you're going to most likely, you know, reach out to him and follow up and have a conversation with that person. Now, with my partner in collaboration, collaborative individual that I work with, I say, hey, when I warmly introduce someone, I want you to be relational first. I do not want you to go in and act like it's a sales phone call and say, hey, Ben, so this is what we've got going on. This is, you know what, blah, 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 and all that shit, right?
Because, I just want to throw this out, Christian. The one thing that makes me like puke in my mouth is when people quite literally say, oh, hey, Christian, I'm just using you as an example here. Oh, hey, Christian, thanks for the referral. That makes me want to puke in my mouth. I just went from introduction to a referral. Like no one you've introduced me to has done that. But when I hear someone say, oh, thanks for the referral, I'm like, all right, so now I'm a lead in their pipeline. Like what's going on here? Like relationship, not transactional.
And what's so interesting, Ben, is because you're a very high caliber person. You network with some amazing people. And it's the same way. When you get to these higher level, right? They've been on 1,000 sales phone calls. They've run successful businesses. They don't want to be talking like a sales thing. They want a relationship. They want a conversation. And if there's synergy, wonderful. Let's talk then about like what our service is, what our product is, and see if we can obviously service each other. So like you were saying, see, I made sure because I lost relationships with people when I did a warm intro. All of a sudden, like you mentioned, they had the misconception. So I had to actually make sure when I do a partnership collaboration, I am very, very very focused and very, very, you know, kind of foot stomp on this and say, hey, I want you to understand is 15-minute collaboration, relational call first. If you feel like there's a synergy, they will, 100% of them will take the phone call because they know, like, and trust me, and they'll have a conversation with you. However, though, 15 minutes, and then when you feel like there is, cool, fantastic, if there is, then you can obviously say, hey, I'd love to talk a little bit more further about how we can connect. Now, all of a sudden, they're pre-framed. They know, like, and trust you, and they're pre-framed to say, hey, you know what? I like this guy. I want to know a little bit more. Fantastic. Or, hey, not really. That's cool. Hey, wonderful. Fantastic, right? The cool thing is it doesn't waste your time. It's just 15 minutes conversational. Now, also, one of the things I always tell people when I do collaborative deals or partnerships, I say, hey, make sure you go in with a service mind. You have an ecosystem and they're looking for other things. And so, hey, ask them what they're looking for and don't be afraid to warmly introduce them to other people. And one of the things that I found so interesting when done correctly, and Ben, you're really good at this as well, which is really, really fun when we're able to, you know, work with people like this cool synergy. I just love it because what's so fun is I've literally have gotten so many emails from people that have networked with these, have bought that service, and then say, hey, man, thanks so much for introducing me to Ben. Thanks so much for introducing me to Heinz. Thanks so much, right? And the reason why that's so beneficial when done correctly is one, it is relational, transformational. It's not selling, it's not pitching, and I make sure that we eliminate that process from it. And it's just having a conversation and talking to people and loving on people. And hey, if there's something there, cool. If there's not, wonderful. And there's no hard feelings. Hey, I know some other people that could help you, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, it's so interesting because it's so hard for so many of us because we're so short-term thinking that so many of us really still want that transactional. And I was talking to one of my partners and I'm always like, do like a 2-week cadence or like a 3-week cadence with a lot of my partners and collaborative people that I work with. And it's interesting because I'm always making sure, hey, how did that go? How can we optimize it? How can we modify it? And I still get some people like, hey, can't they, you know, like, I want them to go to this training first before they get on the phone call with me. And I'm like, no, you're missing the whole point. It's not about that. It's not about training. These people are 8-9-figure entrepreneurs. They are not going to, and a lot of them, even 7-figure entrepreneurs, they're not going to sit there and watch a dumbass training, right? They're just not, they're running a business. They want a solution and they want to find the right people that can, you know, help them get to where they're going. And the way to do that is through conversations and not some sales phone call, not some sort of gimmick shit. It's just relationships, man. And it's funny how many times you and I, we get this, but still, this is why it becomes even more powerful, Ben. Because even though we say this and we get this and we're really good at this, Ben, you're really amazing at this. People still don't listen to it and they do not implement because they're so short-term thinking. But what's so beautiful about that is that is the reason why it becomes even more effective. Because when all of a sudden, when you go out of your way, because they've had so many stupid sales phone calls, so many intros, so many blah, 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 then all of a sudden, it's like someone like you, Ben, that comes along and actually gives value with no ask, with nothing. They're like, wow, that was different. That was, yeah. I like that feeling. And they love that. And that's where it becomes so even more effective. So for those that are listening that are short term and that will not implement this relational aspect, please keep doing it because it makes us look so more effective.
I love it. You're preaching in the choir. I could go on a long rant. I won't, but I was on another podcast and the host was like, you know, I hate those LinkedIn cold messages. And he got me going because I'm like, I love these automated LinkedIn cold messages because it's so much easier for me to be the pony in the freaking pile of shit because all I do is I come in with value. I look at their profile. I edify them. I compliment them. And all these people doing it wrong, it might be you listening. It was me at one point. If all these people doing it wrong is only going to make it easier for the people doing it right. So first off, thanks for having me on your show. I am not an 8 or 9 figure entrepreneur, so I kind of just squeezed in. I don't know if everybody knows that, but I very much have a lifestyle firm right now. I work on my own terms. I do a lot of fun stuff, but I'm not at 8 or 9 figures. A lot of listeners, maybe they aren't entrepreneurs. Maybe they're business development, sales, marketing, all over the place, but they don't have an 8 or 9 figure firm, maybe not even a 7 figure firm. Is everything we just said still correct? Does that wand still work for someone who is, you know, 5, 6, 7 figures? What's your opinion on that? Do you have to get to a certain level for all of that to actually work? Or do you have separate advice for someone who's not there yet?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. So one of the things I would say is it is very applicable because, you know, we talk culture, we talk systems, we talk processes, we talk kind of what you need to be focusing on. In fact, I had one guy on, he runs $60 million business and he was going to, they were going to turn another about $20 million in revenue top line within the year. So the massive growth trajectory, which is beautiful. And he outlined 5 pillars that he needs to focus on and what to focus on at the right time and the right sequence and so forth, like I was mentioning. And I think that's basically what I'm mentioning here is like, yes, you can still listen to these podcasts and implement and integrate because see, I still, just like your podcast, I talk about their journey. I talk about their limiting beliefs. I talk about the psychology a little bit about it as well, because at the end of the day, these people, they are 8 and 9 figure entrepreneurs, but they had to become those 8 and 9 figure entrepreneurs here in their head before they actually built that business and structure. And sometimes there is that confidence. It's actually very interesting. I've been consuming a lot more information regarding, you know, just innate confidence. Some of the most successful people that I've had on my podcast, they had this like innate confidence. Like they knew that they could do it. They're capable of it. And one of the things I want to just emphasize real quick, Ben, is sometimes we have our family and we love our family and they will always support you for who you are, but sometimes not always for who you can become. Because in order to become the person you want to be, you have to destroy and murder the one that you are now. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And that's why it's so important.
The thing I've heard so many times is what got you there won't get you there. What got you here won't get you there. You almost have to burn the person you used to be because they're the person that's plateaued. So you need to be a whole new person to level up to that next step.
Correct. And what's so interesting is I've heard so many people where they had a choice. And there was like a pivotal moment in their life where they could fall back on their family and their family would come around, surround them and love on them. But what happened, and they noticed this was, and this happened in my life as well, it became these same patterns where, okay, you know what? I believe, okay, I got to go get a job. I got to do this, right? And what was interesting, the most successful ones actually eliminated that choice. And yes, that family was going to be there. They loved them and they were going to support them, but they had to remove themselves from that. And so they fell flat and it was terrible. It was devastating. It was destructive, but they fell alone. And sometimes that's the most powerful part because see, then you have to pick yourself up and you have to figure it out. And those, they want to support you 100%. Yes. But also it almost becomes a net and it doesn't really allow you to realize what you're really truly capable of. And the reason why I'm saying this is because I think I've realized this much more than before. you don't realize like the pain tolerance and the confidence and the self-image and the self-esteem. And it's interesting because we tie our self-image and self-esteem and self-identity into certain things. Oh, when I make X amount of dollars, then I'm quote on successful. When I do X, then I'm impactful. When I have a million downloads on XYZ, then I'm, influential. Whatever it is, right? Fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. And we start making these rules, and sometimes either consciously or subconsciously. And so we have to be very, very aware of that. And it's interesting because I got to a point in my life where I had to do that. Everything was imploding, and I could have fell back to my family. I could have asked them for money, but I chose not to. And I went down this path, and I actually had to move away from them. Very, very far away, because it was very intentional. I had to. I realized, okay, hey, you know what? If I don't, then I will fall back into those same patterns, the same beliefs, the same thought processes, and that same Christian will still be alive. But I had to murder that old Christian, right? You just said what you just mentioned. And so I had to become that new person. In order to do that, I had to almost, you have to lie to yourself at some point. We're like, hey, you have to act like you're an 8- and 9-figure entrepreneur before you actually are. You have to walk like that. You have to build confidence. And what is so interesting, Ben, is the ability of confidence. The reason why so many people, when they lose $1 million and the next time they get $1 million, they can acquire it in such a short period of time, is because they don't have all these deflating thoughts and processes. Mm. Right? All these thoughts, right? Because the first time you make $1 million, you're always thinking, Can I really make $1 million? Is this really truly? Can this really build an 8-figure business? Is this really possible? Is this, can I really, am I really the person? Do we have the team? Oh my gosh, is this really ever going to work out? Are we going to build, blah, 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 all those deflating thoughts. What if you just like eliminated all that, act like you've already done it before? How would you play differently? Does that make sense? And it was actually interesting because it's almost like a perception with Muhammad Ali. Hmm. I always ask myself sometimes, like, did he actually win those fights in the ring, or was it actually before the ring, before he even got in the ring, those fights were won? Because it was a perception. He knew confidently. He came in so confidently. The other guy was like, it's Muhammad Ali, just all the mind thing, like, oh man, this is Muhammad Ali, man. I don't know, man. He's the best. He's never lost anything. Oh my, and all these thoughts, how would you play differently? And so Ben, Muhammad Ali, you get in there, man. I've done this 1,000 times, man. I know exactly what to do. I know how to get them out. Boom. There's a lot of training though. I don't want to offset. There's a lot of training, a lot of skills, a lot of hard work that put into it, but it does come down to a little bit of confidence as well. And when you play with that confidence structure, it's so funny how boom, it's one of the things that I'm doing right now. So I'm partnered with a private equity firm. We focus on, like, we're talking about industry specific SaaS companies, about 1.5 million EBITDA and more. And there's certain other requirements that go into it. And my responsibility is raising about $100 million. Now, I've never raised $100 million in my entire life. So I'm like, okay, cool. This will be a fun challenge, right? So I've got amazing investors. We've got some really cool deals. Wonderful, fantastic. We're raising $10 million. Awesome, wonderful. But I'm sitting there going, okay, you know what? It's a mindset. How would I act if I've done this before? How would I structure it? How would I do it? How would I, what's the energy? What's the charisma? What's the confidence? How would that look like? And I started just deploying that. Mm. And then guess what? Now all of a sudden, right, I'm not looking at the scoreboard. I'm just focused on the day-to-day activities. So now it's like, okay, now we're raising $100 million. All right, cool. We're not there yet, but we're on that trajectory. And it's just interesting how you play differently and you think differently when all of a sudden you really have to switch that that confidence and that thought process around. But I would say it's very, very applicable for those that listen to this podcast, to those that listen to my podcast. And I think it's very applicable depending upon where you're at in your industry and where you're at in your trajectory in life.
You got to float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. And I'm seeing two categories, man. Category one in my brain is if then. So if blank, I would have blank. If I just did this, I would be this. Category two is even if I don't have this, even if I have nothing, even if everything crumbles in front of me, then I can still accomplish this. So it's not if I had this, I can accomplish this. It's even if I didn't have this, I could accomplish this. One thing I like to say is confidence comes from memories of winning. And if confidence comes from memories of winning, you said it. I don't have to repeat it. It's those daily actions, those daily tasks, those relationships you build that create the confidence to actually deserve what you want. But none of it's handed to us. We do need to go out and work to get there. So you have these conversations all the time with people way more successful. Again, I don't know how I squeeze into the show. I'm not as successful on paper yet as a lot of people that have been on Journey with Christian D. Evans. How do I listen to that show? Obviously, I'll put in the show notes, but shout out for that. And how do I check it out and listen to it?
Well, Ben, of course you're going to have a be on because you just have a relational aspect and so much network as well as just a good friendship. And so I think one of the things is, yeah, we interview a lot of TEDx speakers and 8-9 figures. However, that we interview individuals like yourself that just have such a massive amount of value added. And I do want to make sure that we add that link down here because that episode was a lot of fun. And but yeah, you guys can go to Apple Podcast Journey with Christian D. Evans podcast, Journey with Christian D. Evans. I tend to talk too fast. Also go to christiandevans.com as well. There's the investor portfolio and then also the podcast, amazing guests that we've had on like Ben and then others as well. And then just kind of what we've got going on and a lot of fun. Yeah.
Listen, guys, my pocketbook doesn't show it just yet, but I got that billionaire mindset, so we'll get there. I'll put all those links in the show notes. People will check it out. Before we go to rapid fire round, kind of want to step away, just ask a random question, because you say it all the time. It's one of your phrases, be uncommon if you can. Break it down. Talk about be uncommon, and then if you can, because one thing that's going through my head is like, what if I can't, or what if someone can't? Like, break down why you love to say be uncommon if you can and what it means.
Well, you know, it's interesting. So I've been thinking about this for the last 18, 24 months, because one of the things I realized is you want to build something that outlasts you. In order to do that, you have to make something bigger than yourself, right? If it was just Christian D. Evans LLC or something like that, which I own that, it's one of my, you know, part of the holding company, but it's just all about me. And I started realizing that it has to be something bigger. And I remember so clearly, oh gosh, when I was 18, 19 or something like that, I was going to Columbus, Ohio, and I was going to get my life license. And there was this poem, Dave Ramsey. I was listening to Dave Ramsey on the radio and unpacking life insurance. And he says this poem and he says, I do not choose to be a common man. It is my right to be uncommon if I can. Seek opportunity, not security. I do not wish to be kept citizen, humbled and dulled by having the state look after me. I would to take the calculated risk, to dream, to build, to fail, and to succeed. I refuse to barter and settle for a dollar, prefer the challenges of life, to be guaranteed existence, the thrill of fulfillment, to the stale calm of utopia. I would not trade my freedom for beneficence, nor my dignity for a handout. I will never cower before any master, nor bend to any threat. It is my heritage to stand erect, proud, and unafraid, to think and act for myself, to enjoy the benefit of my creation, and to face the world boldly, and say this, with God's gracious help, we have done. And that's where it comes from. And one of the things that I started realizing is like, you know what, that resonated with me so much because I guess that's where my beliefs just align so much. You know, I'm one of those individuals like, even you take away everything from me, you can't take away my thoughts, you can't take away my passion, you can't take away my energy, you can't take away my charisma. And there are times I think, something I was talking to someone, I said, you know, be uncommon if you can. Because see, to me, Ben, I think in our own uniqueness and our own struggles gives birth to our greatness. And I think that's really where it comes from. It's understanding that we are all unique. We all have our own struggles. And unpacking that and acknowledging it and taking ownership of it. Like, we've heard this before, but like, allows us to understand that then that is where true greatness can rise above. But we have to go down that path. And I see so many individuals where there has to be a massive life circumstance that has to happen in order for you to unpack that situation, whatever it is. You know, I know we all had messed up situation with mom and dad, and my dad never said I love you or was proud of you, or mom said this, or was always, you know, criticizing or sarcastic or this and that. And you know, we all have to have our own thing that we have to work through, trauma, whatever it is. And I think that's really what that came from, and that poem and that kind of story. And I knew that when I build this next level of where I want to go the next 15, 20, 30 years in this brand, I wanted to be much bigger than myself. And I think that's what I want to portray, if you will.
I love it. You're portraying it. You're doing it. It seems like, you know, alcohol abuse, porn addiction, Netflix abuse, food abuse, all these things are very common. And if we can be uncommon, boom, we can push through the noise and achieve really anything we'd like, I imagine, right?
100%, man. 100%. You know, and we have to acknowledge that we are all uncommon. We have our own attributes and characteristics and things like that that other people don't have. Right? I mean, Ben, you have this innate ability to network and relational, and you're not money motivated, which is awesome, right? You obviously want to make money, but it's not like that drives you. You go for the podcast because you want to add value to your ecosystem. You want to add value to people. You want to, you know, network and connect with people, and you're just relational, just loving people. And that is a gift. And that is very uncommon in today's world. Some people just drive over people and they don't give a shit about them and they just move on. And so you have to see that and you realize that is a gift. And that's uncommon in today's world. And that is your uniqueness.
We're the same way, man. So is the listener. Investing in yourself might actually lower your top line, but it's going to make you happier and make you more successful in the future. So I love all my listeners because they're investing in themselves, like you and I, Christian. We're going to go to the rapid fire round to close out. This is where we just get random, answer short, sweet questions. You can skip it, say whatever you want. I like to start with coffee or tea.
I love coffee. I definitely love Frappuccino or something like that. Really sweet stuff. I love that shit. Yeah, love it.
The sweet stuff. Are you a morning person first thing?
100% morning. I am so energetic. I die at like 9 or 10 o'clock and I'm like gone. There's no energy, whatever. So if you guys have like invite me to a party at 11 o'clock, let's have it in the morning because I'm dead.
Where do you think that energy comes from, man?
Well, it's interesting. I don't know, man. I don't know. I've just always had this energy, man, because I remember like watching. I remember like one time when I was this young kid and I was watching Zorro and I was getting so excited and I was like, oh my gosh, this is so awesome. I was like, you know, 6 or 7 or something like that. And I just was so much energy, even watching movies and so forth. It's I don't know where it comes from, but yeah.
It's a random one that I've been liking. I like this question. So they can be fictional or not, or real life person. Who's one of your heroes and why?
Oh, I love this question. I got this question asked once, and it was Winston Churchill. Ooh. And the reason why is because, you know, one of the things I was so astounded with is you gotta visualize in his time. We now know, looking back at World War II, that we were going to win. But during that time, he didn't know. He was being bombed and he had his troops over on that sandy beach and he had just, there was nothing. And he had if you read the story, he had some of the people in his parliament saying, hey, we should just negotiate a peace deal with Hitler. And he knew he was so wise. He went against, and this is why it takes such a strong character individual. He had to go against the enemy, but also had against some of his own parliament that were trying to embrace that peace. And he said, no, we will. What did he say? He said, we will victory. We will fight in the air. We will fight on the land. We will fight in the sea. We will fight and fight. And until we achieve victory. And I think that is so important. And I would have loved to just unpack his brain during that time and his ups and downs. And you know, that would be the one individual that I would love to just learn more from.
Love Winston Churchill. Great answer, man. Well, one more. Give us a big goal for the future. And of course, how me or any of the listeners can help you achieve it.
Yeah. So one of the biggest things is I'm really just focusing on, just like yourself, Ben, just adding value to my ecosystem as much as possible. We are raising a really amazing capital for some cool deal flow and whatever. However, though, one of the biggest things I'm really focused on is really exploding the Journey with Christian D. Evans podcast platform, because I do think that we talk a lot about basic business concepts. We don't talk about higher level stuff. And so that's why it's really fun to see kind of, we've got amazing trajectory. We have been ranking, you know, and a top lot of, you know, ranking the highest and whatever. And that has a lot to do with just our ecosystem. I noticed there's a lot of need for this right now. And, you know, people like yourself, just having me being featured on your podcast, Ben, I really appreciate that as much as, I mean, just amazingly. And for those that obviously are running amazing businesses and they want to learn more, you know, they can obviously, you know, consume that content. But that's one of my biggest goals right now. I would like to get in a situation where it becomes a platform where we go international, and it's not just here in the United States and Canada, but we really, really hone in. I think there's a lot of international countries that do not have access to this information, do not have access to these opportunities. And what's so beautiful is I can share this message. I can share this out to those areas that I think they would benefit and need it. So I think that's the biggest thing that I'm really focused on right now, man.
We're here to help, man. I've got about 2.5 billion people listening to this podcast. No, not exactly, but they're all going to go to the show notes. They're going to subscribe to yours. I tell people all the time, I'm about collective impact. If you unsubscribe to my show because you like Christian's more, I'm not going to lose any sleep as long as we're getting the right knowledge to the right people. So go to the show notes, check out Journey with Christian D. Evans. Anything else, man? LinkedIn, email, how should I reach out to you? Maybe I want to work with you. Maybe I want to make a friend. What else can I do?
Yeah, really, Christian D. Evans, you can find LinkedIn. You can find our YouTube channel as well. And then also, you know, ChristianDEvans.com. We're rebranding everything because we're going to be doing a TEDx talk in late October. So we're going to wait for that for a rebrand and publishing a book and fun stuff. But yeah, that's kind of all of our activity. Ben, I really appreciate just what you're doing, man. You are a light to this world. And I know kind of your story a little bit and what you've had to go through just recently as well. But I just love how you just got back up and just got back on the horse and just adding value and loving on people. I think that is a very rare characteristic. And I really mean this from the true depth of my heart, that I think, you know, you have such massive potential at such a high level to impact so many people. And I just love to see your journey. I appreciate being on here, man.
Appreciate it, bro. First off, man, I received that. I can't say it as beautifully as you did, but I literally ditto. Like, I reciprocate everything to you. I think you're incredibly well connected. I think you're a giver. I think you're a lover. I appreciate everything you're doing. And hey, man, maybe we'll do another episode or two together. Let's keep the conversation going. Thanks again 100%. For coming on the show, man. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks again for listening to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. You need to go subscribe if you haven't yet. This show is completely free. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right. Thanks once more for listening to LST. I am so grateful. Talk to you soon.